We're coming to the end of this first portion of Acts, and then we're going to take a break. As far as I know, right now we're going to spend a while looking at slides from the Book of Acts that Todd Boland has put together. And we can go through them pretty quickly with the clicker, but I think it would be helpful for you to see what we've been, just the geography, the archaeology, those types of things that he has put together. So we'll do that for a little while and go from there. All right, Acts chapter 12, verses 1 and 2 is this really difficult thing, and I've worded it a little bit differently than what some would. Some people who believe strongly in the sovereignty of God would say that Jesus puts James to death by the hand of Herod. Like, well, that's sort of one way to look at it. I don't think that's the most helpful way to look at it, though Jesus does hold the keys to life and death. I know that, but I think I think it's okay if we allow Jesus to allow things, right? In that sense, that he grants his sovereign permission. And that's what happens here in verses 1 and 2. Now, about that time, Herod, the king, now again, Herod is a title similar to Pharaoh, right? It's you have to ask yourself, which Herod? And Luke doesn't tell us because you should just know, right? It's like, well, that's not helpful. So if you figure it out, it comes out to be King Herod Agrippa the First. And there are other Herod Agrippas, and it gets really confusing. But Herod laid hands on some who belonged to the church. For what purpose? Why did he arrest them? To cause harm to them, right? So this was not just an oops. This was a deliberate attempt to cause harm. And he had James, the brother of John, put to death with a sword. Now, that's an interesting thing. So let's look at these notes that I have here for you. First of all, Stan Toussaint, again, who passed away within the last short while here, last year or two, originally from Hinckley, Minnesota, taught at Dallas for many, many years. Note how this cold-heartedness stands in stark contrast to the merciful love of the Antioch congregation. And Luke's not opposed to setting up these contrasts. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes with our chapter divisions, right, we kind of miss some of this. We think, oh, everything that happened in chapter 11 stays in chapter 11. Right? Well, actually, 11 leads to 12. I remember that from math class somewhere in school. But the flow of thought sometimes, the chapter divisions hinder some of that. And just remember, chapter divisions are not inspired by God, nor are your verse divisions, right? Those were added hundreds and hundreds of years later to help people like you and me figure out where are we. And it's just a helpful thing to have them. We're not here to argue that we should abolish all chapter and verse divisions. That's not helpful. But Toussaint is correct in that the early church of verses 27 through 30 demonstrated great compassion. And then there's Herod. Right? That's the point. And Herod is the grandson of Herod the Great. Herod reigned for only 7 years, roughly. He was pro-Pharisee, so he was more on the shall we say, more on the conservative side of Judaism. He sought to be popular among the Jewish people. He was probably in his bloodline more Jewish than anything. Remember, Herod the Great was a descendant of Esau, right? He was an Idumean, which is Edom, right, related to the Edomites or the people of Esau. But Herod the Great and all these Herods, it's a really disgusting thing. But if you read through their history and all this intermarrying and marrying, it's It's mind-boggling. But in there, they ended up intermarrying with the Jews, and so there's Jewish bloodline in here, and so he's trying to say, I'm Jewish too, right? He can show his little certificate from Ancestry.com and say, see, right? Jewish line, right? And so he's trying to accomplish that at this throughout his reign. At the same time, he does this thing here to the church, which is comprised primarily in Jerusalem of Jews, right? So he's quite selective, right? He wants to be known as a Jewish lover as long as it's certain Jews, right? It's interesting how we can be so particular in our targets. But why does he want to mistreat the church? Well, it is to cause harm, but this is, as I've typed in there, your first truly political persecution. Earlier, it had come from the Sadducees, which was primarily religious, in chapter 4, and in chapter 8, again, a religious persecution, which expands to include the Pharisees. And Herod Agrippa I is trying to appeal to the Pharisees, because why? They run the synagogues. Right? And he wants that popular support. Right? Politicians have been politicians, right, for thousands of years. How can I get your vote, so to speak? How can I get your support? How can I get you to think I'm a great guy? By spending your money, right? Which is what's happening here. So here's Herod, and he is seeking to accomplish this. He arrests James, the brother of John. Notice here is the second, we're dealing here with two of the three parts of that inner circle that Jesus had, right? Peter, James, and John, right? And that's what's happening here. He's going after that inner circle of Christ. Again, I've typed in there for you, James or Jacob. I think we've talked about that before. If you look it up in the Greek New Testament, you will see the name Jacobus, right? Jacobus is what it says. And at some point in time, people who do the translation stuff said, ooh, we can't have Jacob because that would sound really Jewish and that might be confusing, so let's call him James, which I think is really confusing as well. But whoever the powers that be decided those things. But James, the brother of John, and it's not Jesus' half-brother, that's for another time, but James is the one who had, well, in Mark chapter 10, remember, can we drink of the cup? Can we? Yeah, you will. And this is where it happens. He does suffer for the sake of Christ. Now, he is beheaded. It says he is put to death with a sword. From what I can tell and what the research from others who have walked through this, that seems to be a form of beheading. Okay. Now, there's a typo here which makes no sense for you, so you'll need to change this one. The Jews normally use four kinds of capital punishment. They would stone people to death. They would burn people to death. They would kill them by the sword as a stabbing, and then they would choke people to death. Beheading was more of a Roman political type of a thing. Now, beheading usually followed, it should say, instead of by, because that would really be weird, should say being, right? Beheading usually followed being stripped and scourged. Why would you strip and scourge a headless corpse, right? So there's a typo. But it was a way of humiliation. It was a way, obviously, of disfiguring, and how people freak out over the disfiguring of a body and what's going to happen in the afterlife. That's been around for a really, really long time. At the same time, beheading was considered merciful. right? Because it was swift. So it was not something that, you know, the choking, the stoning, I mean, that could go on for quite a while, right? But the beheading was swift. So that's what happens to James. Now, as we've said, these two-thirds of Jesus' inner circle are in prison. We don't know where John is at this point, but verse 3 tells us, verses 3 and following, that when he, Herod, saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded to arrest Peter also. Now, does that mean, I would think that that's more because Peter is recognized as the leader, right? John is not. Though Peter and John do things there in Acts chapter 3, Peter is still, he's the guy, right? So he goes after Peter. Now, the question is, how many other times has Peter been arrested? I've given you at least two that we know of. Now again, Acts is not a complete record of the early church. It's possible he could have been arrested more, but we know that these are for sure these things. And so the question arises, is it necessarily a sinful thing to be arrested? Right? And Peter would tell us, I hope not. Right? And yet other Christians have been in jail, they've been in prison. You think, and we have a couple of books in our church library on the how the Soviets put Christians into prison for decades, right? And you can read their accounts, Georgi Vins and others who have written on that. But Peter is arrested. Let's look at, can we jump over to Hebrews 11 real quick here? Hebrews 11, verses 35 and following. Why is Peter released? Now again, I just spoiled the story here, but why is Peter released? Because you were waiting to find out what happens, right? When he gets, after he gets arrested. What was that? Spoiler alert, sorry. Yeah, now you know, Peter gets really, you can go sit upstairs if you want to and not listen to the rest. But we look at this and we say, well, that's not fair, right? Why does James die and Peter lives? Where does James go when he dies? Goes to the presence of Christ, right? You really want him back? Would James really want to come back? Yeah, I don't think so, right? So, well, it's good for James, bad for Mrs. James, right, temporarily. But look at Hebrews 11, verse 35. Women receive back their dead by resurrection, which is great. Others were tortured, not accepting their release so that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others experienced mockings and floggings, yes, also chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, which is probably a reference to the tradition regarding Isaiah, the prophet. They were tempted, they were put to death with the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and mistreated. And verse 38, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in desolate places and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. The point is what? In the sovereignty of God, there is a whole wide variety of outcomes to your circumstances, right? And behind all of that is the sovereign God, and the Hebrews 11 is what? In whom you should put your trust, right? That God, those who come to God, Hebrews 11 tells us, those who come to God must believe that he is, and that he is what? A rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Did James go to his reward? Yes. Was it difficult? Yes. Right? So in from our perspective, you hear people say, well, that's not fair to Mrs. James. She lost her husband for a while. temporarily. She did. But James got his reward, right? He gets to see Christ in all of his glory, right? So what I'm cautioning us is to be careful how that we don't come at this from a merely horizontal perspective, right? Otherwise, we can end up judging God unfairly, right? Shame on us. But this, we need to be cautious. Now, Peter is arrested, and Luke then puts in here, now it was during the days of unleavened bread. So we know from history that a Passover in this year takes place on April 4th of 44, and Peter is arrested. And it says in verse 4, when he had seized him, taken him into custody, he put him in prison, very possibly the fortress Antonia, which is on that northwest corner of the temple. That's where there was a garrison of Roman soldiers there. That's possible. That's where it was. Delivered him to four squads of soldiers to guard him. Now, that would seem to be four soldiers on six-hour shifts and just rotating through this process. Most likely, again, what we know from secular accounts from this time frame, he would be chained to two soldiers and two others would guard them, right? So that's why there would be those four. So, and then he is, what does it say, intending after the Passover to bring him out before the people. Now, we also know from later on in verse 10 that there was also an iron gate. So they have done everything possible to make sure Peter cannot get out, right? This is extremely important to the story, and I know I already spoiled it, but this is extremely important for us because here the authorities have done all they could. Verse 5 says that Peter was kept in the prison. So there, we showed them Christians, right? And I love how Luke records this. But prayer for him was being made fervently by the church to God, right? And as a believer, you go, huh, right? You've never heard this before, right? Pretend. And so it's like, oh, I wonder what God's going to do, right? Herod has done everything he could. It does not look good for the home team. And yet, boy, those people are praying. Now, notice what it says. And what it does not say, prayer for him. For what? What about him? What would you pray for Peter if you were in their sandals? Right? Would you pray for his release? Would you pray for wisdom and grace for him? Would you pray for mercy? Would you pray for his wife? Yeah, right? Maybe he has kids. We don't know. There's nothing recorded about that in Scripture. But we know he's married, right? Because he has a mother-in-law. So you might want to pray for her as well. But it doesn't say what they're praying for him. And this is very important because of what happens, right? What happens when he shows up and they're still praying, right? And what was their response? So are they praying that God would receive his soul into heaven? Maybe they're assuming he's going to die and God give him grace to endure this beheading. I mean, James was beheaded, so probably Peter's going to be beheaded. And just pray for him to die well, right? Because Jesus had said, Peter, this death by which you are going to glorify God, right? Is this the time? Maybe so. But praying for Peter. So there's no, it doesn't give us the details. Now, later on in verses 12 through 16, we notice that they are extremely surprised when their prayers are answered. Right? Have you ever been surprised when your prayers were answered? Not that we want to admit publicly, probably, but I think most of us would have to say, yeah, I just didn't think that would, that's not quite, or when, or we're a little surprised. Now, the Jewish commentary, New Testament commentary, is that David Stearns, is that the guy who put that together, points out five things about their prayers. First of all, it is intense. Prayer was being made fervently. It was ongoing. Prayer was being made. It wasn't just a one-time thing. Notice their prayers were being offered to God in genuine contact with the living God. They weren't just repeating something they had learned when they were little kids. They were praying directly to the living God. They were praying specifically, not vaguely. They were praying for Peter. And prayer was being made by the church. So everybody, well, it gives the impression that the church collective was characterized by praying for Peter. Now, you sit back and think through this theologically, and you think about Herod Agrippa I. And you think about him, and you think, well, here's this guy who's done everything he can, but God is working. And you wonder, how's that going to impact Herod's life? Right? Well, we're going to see, right? That's chapter 12, verses 20 through 25. He ends up, well, I'll save that. We'll save that for another time. But all these things are happening. And so verses 6 through 12, Peter's response to his deliverance. Now, on the very night when Herod was about to bring him forward, in other words, he was going to bring him out publicly after Passover. What's Peter doing? Peter's sleeping. Now, if you were anticipating your one of your best friends all these years, James has been killed. You've been arrested by the same guy. And you're put in this prison. What is your anticipation? And how would you respond to that? See, Peter's sleeping. Now, it doesn't mean he doesn't care. Maybe it means he's exhausted. Maybe it means he's trusting God in the midst of all of this. But isn't that why you pray for Peter? Right? Go ahead. Very good. That's good comparison. And Jesus in the Mark account of that, they're going across the deepest part of the Sea of Galilee, right? It's 150 feet deep on that north end. And the storm is terrible and Jesus is sleeping, and Peter's response was, what? Don't you care? Excuse me, Lord, don't you care? You know, gotta be respectful in our doubting. But you know, he's And Peter is rebuked by that and apparently learns something from that. So that's a good contrast. Yeah, very good. Good comparison. So here Peter is sleeping between two soldiers bound with two chains and guards in front of the door. That's why we have those four, probably. The guards in front of the door were watching over the prison. In other words, what? This is sealed tight, right? This is it's just from a human perspective, right? It's just, in verse 7, Luke gives to us. And you wonder when he writes this if there's not just a little grin on his face when he writes verse 7, right? And behold, an angel of the Lord suddenly appeared, and light shone in the cell. And Peter's still sleeping, so what does he do? He smacks Peter in the side, right? And woke him up, saying, rise up quickly. Again, sometimes you just, it would be nice to be able to see a video of these. Maybe when we get to heaven, we can see some reruns of these things. But rise up quickly, and that his chains fell off his hands. Not off of the guard's hands. Right? So, you see this? Right? You see these guards are there, and apparently they're sleeping, because if the chains fall off of Peter's hands, there's going to be some noise, right? Some clinking, and it would perhaps some release of some tension on those chains. And yet the guards aren't aware, apparently, because we'll see this as we go through this. And the angel says to him, gird yourself, in other words, get dressed, put on your sandals. And he did so. And he, the angel, said to him, wrap your garment around you and follow me. And it's just, this is just mind-boggling what happens here. And he went out and continued to follow, and he did not know that what was being done by the angel was real, but was thinking he was seeing a vision. And when they had passed the first and second guard posts, they came to the iron gate that leads into the city, which opened for them by itself. And they went out and went along one street, and immediately the angel departed from him. And again, if what we're talking about is indeed up here at the corner in the Fortress Antonia, this is a busy place, right? There's this street that runs along here. Well, there's a street that runs here. There's another street that runs here. The temple and the fortress are just busy places. And yet Peter is able to go, if we're at the Fortress Antonia, he is able to go through all this with nobody noticing. Okay. How lucky was he, huh? No. Yeah, right? So this miracle that's taking place is a big deal. This is a public thing. And Peter's going through this thinking he's dreaming, he's having this vision, and now he finds himself out on the street. Okay? That makes sense for you? What's all happened here? That this, he is able to get out from this, wherever his cell was in this prison, all the way out, and nobody asks him. Nobody asks him for his passcode. Nobody asks him for his driver's license. Nobody stops him. He's able to go all the way out. See, so it's not just getting out of the jail cell, right? It's getting out through the prison, out of the prison, out onto the street. Does that make sense? Verse 11 tells us that Peter came to himself. So he finally realizes, right? It's like, what? Sleepwalking. No, it's not sleepwalking, right? It's not vision walking. He's going out in obedience to this angel that God sent to him. And he came to himself and he said, now truly I know that the Lord, probably a reference to Jesus, has sent his angel and rescued me from the hand of Herod and from all that the Jewish people were expecting. So, verse 12, and when he realized this, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, who was also called Mark, where many were gathered together and were praying. Now, Peter initially obeys, on our notes here, letter D. Peter's initial response is that of obedience, but a misinterpretation of the events. Apparently, the guards have been rendered unresponsive in some way, that they are somehow unable to see and to hear and to sense that the doors have opened, right? Metal hinges, all of this without disturbing anybody. And ultimately, Peter incorrectly interprets this as an angelic rescue. So who or what is Peter, from whom or what is Peter rescued? Well, verse 11 says, he has rescued me from the hand of Herod, so from the politician, and he has rescued me from all that the Jewish people were expecting. So the rescue has transpired. Now, real quickly, in verse 12, having John Mark introduced here in verse 12, the cousin of Barnabas, and you can look those references up, because he's introduced here because he shows up in just a couple chapters, right? And that's really important how Luke just slides this in here at this time. Verse 13 says, "And when he knocked at the door of the gate, a servant girl named Rhoda came to answer." So here's this young woman with the name, we would translate it as Rose, right? Rhododendron, a rose tree, quite literally. But here is the house of Mary, the mother of John Mark. She is a slave owner. And again, we probably should take longer on this, and we can next time, but let me just introduce this. She's a slave owner because she has a servant girl, right? Make the connection, right? Now, there's no condemnation of her being a slave owner. There's no apology for her owning a slave girl at this time. Slaves were distinct from normal property. So they were recognized as being human beings. Rhoda is clearly portrayed, and this is unusual. If you go back and you read contemporary literature about the slaves, Roman writers and Greek writers would portray slaves as being dishonest, untrustworthy, cantankerous people. Okay? And that was just the way it was portrayed. She's not portrayed that way. Rhoda is portrayed as a reliable, honest human being who perceives truth when the others do not. Right? She's a slave girl, but she knows what's going on. She's the only Christian slave that is named in the book of Acts. So apparently Luke says this is a big deal, and he wants to make sure she is honored for this. I have Craig Keener's article on slaves and slavery, if you would like me to forward that to you. I made it into a PDF. But he spends, I forget, lots and lots of pages in his commentary on the issue of slaves and slavery. But we know that Rhoda is familiar enough with Peter to recognize his voice. Right? I don't know how your brain works, but when people, or you talk to somebody, what do you remember? You remember their name? You remember their voice? Eh? What's I joked with somebody yesterday. Boy, I can't remember your name, but your breath is familiar. But you remember people on a variety of things, right? She recognizes Peter's voice. Now, that's how my brain works. When somebody calls, I recognize the voice. I don't recognize the number or the name, right? But I've heard that voice before. She remembers Peter's voice. And she is familiar enough with Peter to rejoice that he escapes. Right, so she's not groveling way down here as this, you know, disregarded, unfortunate slave. She rejoices that Peter has been rescued. As someone has pointed out, it is somewhat humorous that the gate of the prison is opened while the gate to the house of the Christians remains closed. Right, that's an interesting observation. Some are knocking on heaven's door in prayer while Peter keeps knocking on their earthly door, right? Yeah, we're praying, don't bother us. Yeah, right? Yeah, but Peter, it's Peter. Yeah, we're praying, right? So we need to stop there, but keep that in mind as, again, I know I spoiled it earlier, but so Peter shows up, and how do the Christians respond to Rhoda's information? Okay, maybe you're aware of that already, but there's all this going on. It's Passover. You've just celebrated the deliverance of the people of Israel from the land of Egypt, and maybe there's some significance there that this Peter's rescue is associated with that. But this dynamic and that James has been put to death, we've lost one of the three, right? The inner circle, and how that's going to impact the church that James is gone and how are we going to survive? Right? All those things running through people's minds. So we'll stop there.